What's on your mind, Stefan and Charles and team? What's happening?
Keith is on too. I'm not sure if you saw them or not, Rob.
Okay, Keith, welcome.
I see Ted Ford. How are you, Ted?
Good. How about you?
Good. And I see Johnny has popped up, but I don't see a visual.
Rob, I'll jump in.
Sure.
I did have a question. How often are we trimming clients
sure
as we're adding new clients?
I'm not sure why he's pulling a no-show on his face here.
Okay.
The question is, how often should you be trimming clients? Well, once you've done your initial segmentation, then and you get down to your ideal number, right? It may be, 100 or 80 or 70 or whatever it is. Then once a year, you got to go back through and see who snuck in to your practice. And they will sneak in. Somebody will make an exception that you didn't even know about. And there they are. And you're like, where did this guy come from? So you need to go through, and as you add clients, you really should be segmenting them away. Now, whether you want to do it one, bring in one, segment one, or you want to wait till each quarter, or you just want to do it all at once at the end of the year, it's kind of up to you. But you don't want to add 10 clients and not segment away a few. One of the things that we typically suggest is you bring in a $2 million client and you get rid of, four $500,000 clients or something, or, eight $250,000 clients to just make your practice simpler. Smaller and simpler is better.
I guess in this case, for teams like us that are just launching and transitioning into this, if we're going to be telling these clients, here's what to expect, and then, 6 months or a year, I mean, you're okay with me going back to those same clients I just promised a year out?
One of the things we talk about is the stair step to the stars. So, theoretically, we want to be, Ebony should be working on building teams that have different minimums so that when you say, okay, it's been a great year, I'm going to reassign four clients, but they're going to get Supernova because you spoiled them, right? You told them, hey, we're going to be giving you Supernova. And frankly, we overestimate our value to some of these smaller clients. They don't really need us personally for all the things because they don't do that much. So what they need is somebody that cares about them and is going to talk to them and take good care of them. And so what you want is having a place to go with these people once you've spoiled them with Supernova.
Okay.
So they just have different minimums and you go here. As long as somebody's giving them great, if somebody's talking to them once a month, that's better than they've ever had, right? So it's wonderful. And they understand that you're Effley Bailey can't, in the old days, that was the name everybody knew. Effley Bailey can't do, can't handle all the trials himself. So, you don't expect to always be with the same person. So good. So good. This is a good thing. Shall we kind of open it up to questions and see where we go? Unless Ebony, you got something that you want to use this moment for.
I'd like to just really quickly take a moment to take everybody's pulse. I'd just like to know how everybody's feeling about their progress up to this point. What's been, I guess, the easiest thing for you to do with this coaching, and what's been your biggest challenge? Whoever would like to share that.
I
mean, don't everybody speak up at once.
I'll speak some words from the Payton group. We actually tackled the big task of trying to do the segmentation and choose those clients that we were going to, you know, share with someone else and move them on their way. And Payton Ford actually has the task of doing that call, those calls with our clients. And so far, I think he's had some pretty good, you know, conversation with those clients, and maybe some that are more hard. Payton probably can speak for that, but it was a good exercise for us. It makes us realize what our goals are and how we're going to refine our business. And I think it's at the end of the day, even though it's challenging, and we've just, you know, put our toe in the water, really. We're kind of excited about it, and I really appreciate the weekly videos, kind of reiterate a lot of the things that we don't need to forget as we go along. So I really think it's a good exercise for us to keep focused on. So, and we like to hold each other accountable, and those, the ranking on the homework for us, the week three assignment helped us realize what our tasks are for each of us as members of the team. So far so good.
That's great feedback, Lisa. Thank you. To your point about Payton, making those calls, Payton, can you talk a little bit about the calls, your approach, based on, you know, what Rob taught you all about how to have that conversation? Can you talk about just the flow of those calls?
Yeah, it's a lot easier for us because the person that we're sending them to was actually on our team for like over a year. So our clients that we're sending them off, the ones that we are sending off already know that advisor. So the conversations have been going super smoothly, and we've actually had one or two that are going to bring over another 600 or 700 to be able to stay with
us. Wow.
That's great.
That's great. So it seems like, Lisa, you said you put your toe in, but it sounds a little bit more like you guys at least put your ankles in. I mean, you're making the calls, you know, you've already
right.
uncovered some assets. So, you know, good stuff. This is great to hear.
We have to do is put a life preserver on Johnny, because he's the one who created all these relationships. So mm-hmm. we might have to give him a snorkel, because he's really might be struggling with the fact that he's letting some of them go. So
yeah. Yeah.
That, and because I've been married to him for over 30 years or however many years, I understand and know a lot of these clients. So it's easy to look at on paper. It's harder for, to say yes, send them on their way. And unfortunately, Payton's doing it, but also fortunately he doesn't have the relationship with them. So, I think that's been easier, because if Johnny had to do it, it would have been, like pulling his wisdom teeth out, I think. So there we
That's
are.
That's actually an excellent point, that the person who probably developed the relationships may not need to be the one having that conversation. I mean, if it fits your team's paradigm, that's actually an excellent point. Thank you. Thank you for sharing, both of you.
Let me just raise a quick point on a couple of the things that Rob says, and let's continue this dialogue because it's very, very good. But one of the things that we have to continue to talk about during this segmentation process is when you're right-sizing the book, we're trying to free up your time and prepare you for our client acquisition methodologies. And we coach on like 8 different client acquisition methodologies that don't even involve cold calling. So if we don't have the time by right-sizing the book and segmenting, we can't get to that place we really want to get to, which is growing that upper end of the book. So I just wanted to add that on to some of the comments that Rob made. So go ahead and continue, Ebony, with this dialogue. It's very good.
So, Bob, you were – thank you, Curtis, for that feedback. Bob, you were going to say something?
Yeah, thanks, Ebony. I think one of the challenges could become – and, you know, Stefan, you can jump in if you see – is where do all these accounts go? In theory, it sounds great to get rid of, you know, $180,000 account, but if it's a SEP IRA, the call center doesn't take a lot. There's more reasons they don't take accounts than when to take accounts. And my question for the group or anyone else is, how are they handling that? When, who are they giving these small relationships to? Because it, again, to say I have a trusted advisor and you're going to give them or her 72 accounts under 100,000, you know, the virtual advisor center won't take half of them. So what do you do with those accounts? I think that's going to be a challenge.
Yeah, we were fortunate enough to have an FAA who was willing to take anybody and anybody. So that we got lucky there.
Yeah.
We haven't been able to send anybody to the CAC yet.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting process because I don't, to your point, Bob, I don't have that answer. So I was hoping John was going to share an easier answer than how he lucked out with his FAA. But yeah, because I also don't want to, you know, handcuff someone else, you know, and hurt their growth as they're building their practice. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll chime in on that question a little bit. One of the things through our experience that we have witnessed is kind of the adoption of another FA, not a team member, but in the future he could potentially become a team member, where accounts are reassigned to that individual, and then the management of the office may work out a split arrangement. So now you're going to kind of take a little bit of responsibility to educate this person on some of the Supernova concepts, 1242, and you're going to assign some accounts to him, and on a split basis, you might, you know, receive some of the revenue that's generated. But it gives that FA an opportunity to go ahead and do a deep dive in the hopes that they may cultivate something out of the relationship if it has potential. And don't forget the butlers. You know, the butlers receive a 4-1 service, okay, and 3 butlers equal 1 household account. So you don't want to clutter your book with all butlers, but you are able to keep some butlers as clients. But remember, 3 butlers equal 1 household relationship in Supernova. So those are just a couple of thoughts.
Ebony, yep. you know, I work very closely with the client service center over the years because we were stuck with some of the same challenges that your teams are. And what we just found was by putting pressure on them, we were able to have them open up more and more opportunities to take clients. So, you know, we couldn't give away annuities. We couldn't give away this or that. And over time, they were able to accommodate more and more. So my suggestion is calling them and then exerting the proper amount of frustration and coaching to that particular section so that they will understand that when they shut down your ability to transfer accounts, they ruin productivity in the field. So just, you know, management can help. And that's just one of the things that we worked on, and they were very – over time, they were very cooperative. They just needed to push because, you know, they're the same as anybody else. They want productivity. And you got to tell them that they're a resource, not a productivity center. And that's something that you can help on. So if one firm can do it, all the firms can do it, right? So you can check with my former associates on
that. I think probably the angst is, you know, we do, those conversations have been had with the advisory center, and candidly, you know, there's going to be pushback there. That may be kind of easier said than done, right? We can have the conversation and they're going to say, we understand, and we're still not taking the account. So then, you know, maybe we do talk about leveraging some people in the complex that we may not know need these accounts, and maybe have those types of conversations. Because, you know, to Bob and Stefan's point, it is, you don't want to create more work for somebody. And then you don't want to be chasing your tail fighting a losing battle with the CAC because, you know, they're refusing to take an account because it's got whatever, it's a SAP or it's this or it's that. So, go ahead, Rob.
Here's a couple of, one is I was one of those senators from the Midwest, right? I was the district director and Curtis ran the West Coast. And that's the level you have to get to in order to make any changes in the firm. You guys aren't going to be able to do it, but that's their job. That was my job. My job was to fix the firm, vote in bills that would change things. And so, that's the level you need to go to lobby for change. And the second thing is if in fact they refuse or won't, you get frustrated and you've got a bunch of people doing this and you have no place to send them, then what you can do is do what we did, which was create our own client service center with two CAs that are registered, and you put all the accounts in there. And they give great service, and you run 1,000 accounts out of that. And you got a profit center. And at the same time, I mean, right, Curtis? We had our own client service centers in the offices in the early days before we had real client service centers. And it worked fine. You know, I had two terrific gals when in 1980, I started the service center in my office with two CAs, and they were terrific. And I bet we had, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 accounts in there. So, and you know, you need two because you gotta go to the ladies room or you gotta go to the men's room and somebody goes on vacation. So you gotta have some backups, but it's a pretty good operation. We had a little office for him inside the office and everything. It was terrific.
So let me ask you this about that, Rob. Yeah. Are you saying that these support professionals, what did they do to service the account? Because I will tell you here, they're going to be limited. They're not, well, I'll just be frank. Morgan Stanley's not going to allow them to drop accounts in a support professional's number. It's gonna immediately generate a red flag as to, you know, cause that's going to be kind of interpreted as putting that responsibility on someone who is not allowed to support the account in that way. So you make them
an FA and it's going to hurt your productivity numbers, but it's going to help the productivity numbers of all your other FAs. So.
We're not going to win that battle on this phone call. So, you know, it's just, it's a reality that we're dealing with and we'll just have to figure it out. So,
but anyway, that's, you know, we digress, but that's, you know, that's a solution. And, you know, you got to be creative and innovative in the world. And so that's what we did. All right. This week, week three, we focused on roles and responsibilities. I'd like to spend a minute on that, because I don't want to get behind. So, Stefan, and your team, why don't you tell me what role the responsibilities you guys are taking on, and we'll catch up with that.
Sure. I'm pulling it up as we speak. So on our call last week, Rob, you may remember some of these to us feels like it's more than one person, like implementation. Right. I asked you that question and, you know, to me, Charles is the obvious answer for implementation, but you expanded what that really meant. So it's not just implementation of investments, it's implementation of every segment of the business. So, I'm just going to give you the short answer of each one. So Charles would be implementation. Tyler would be planning. Director of brand would be, Tyler and Miranda. I would be responsible for marketing and growth. And then Charles and I would be co-leadership, on that realm. So that's kind of how we hashed it out.
Great.
And to my comment earlier, I mean, if you have any insight on how other people have implemented, because a lot of these, I think, you know, have subsectors where, you know, there's a lot underneath some of these titles. So I don't know if you've had a good model or not.
Here's what, it's not as important as to who is doing it, is it that they take responsibility.
Okay.
Okay. And you can change. I mean, you don't have to lock these in. You can do it for 6 months and then switch, or do it for a year and then switch. But one of the things to do is to understand. Now the teams that are in week 12 and month, you know, month one, month two, month three down the road, I have them reporting in based on their roles and responsibilities. So this helps them to think as a team with their roles and responsibilities. So when we're talking about implementation, we're talking about, is there a more efficient way and more productive way to run the practice from the investment side of things? You know, planning. So we just go through each one and we take it to another level, right? So each director, really should take their role very seriously from this point on, to think in terms of, okay, I'm a director of planning. I'm in charge of the planning process and how many plans we do and the quality of that experience. And so everybody's doing planning, but I'm the one ultimately is accountable. And that's the same with implementation and the investment process and brand management and the Supernova process and marketing and the pipeline and the acquisition and growth process. Are we efficient, effective in that? So, and then leadership, is everybody doing their job? So this is what really helps us to get organized and then stay organized, but not all be thinking that they're doing everything or responsible for everything. If everybody does their job, then you can kind of turn over the accounting on how many plans we're doing and whether or not we're doing them well to somebody else while you work on marketing. So that's the idea, leveraging the teams. And these are all teams that we have on today. So everybody should be thinking, how can we leverage our team and have people do more of what they're good at and just get the extra leverage of the team. So you want to go through the rest of the teams and see how you guys are doing in terms of?
Let's hear from the Pedden Group. I think they've got, you know, some interesting dynamics going on with the delegation of duties and responsibilities. So, you know, Johnny, Lisa, you know, chime in.
I don't think so, Johnny. Can you hear Johnny?
Yeah. No, no.
Okay.
Okay. I'll do the talking. I don't think his microphone is working or something. I'm not sure why. I can hear him downstairs. Anyway, we've went through this, and I think Curtis heard it last week, but the director of planning, we have Peyton, Ford doing that, primarily because he's been the most, accountable for the life views and those type, planning, for our clients. So he takes lead on that. And then the director of implementation is Johnny. And the director of brand is myself. Then we went to the director of marketing and growth, and we initially put Peyton and myself, but after I heard Rob today, that might need to be all three of us, because obviously Johnny is integral in the growth part as well. So we might have to rethink that, I guess. And then the director of leadership, we had Johnny, and because Peyton is an FA as well, I would think we would want both of those there. But then last week, Peyton said I should be that. So I'm not sure. But we, now that we've been hearing more, maybe we have to, rethink some of those roles.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Curtis.
Well, one of the things that we want to think about is ultimate responsibility. So if you know, we can all work on these topics, but one person should be ultimately responsible. It's kind of like, you can have two people working on a client, but in our world, one person ultimately is responsible for that client. If we lose the client, it's your fault. And the question is, if we have multiple people in charge of something, then no one's responsible. Okay. So I would rather see you trade off. So like, for example, I'd rather see Charles or Stefan in charge of leadership and then trade off after 6 months or a year. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't coach each other and help each other and develop together, but ultimately one person should be in charge of each of the roles and responsibilities. Even though we're all going to do it, we're all going to lead, we're all going to market, we're all going to do planning, we're all going to do 12-4-2, one person needs to be in charge. So that comes from years and years of delegating and holding people accountable.
Yeah, you know, I think that that's so important, because, you know, you can't show up one day and say, that's not my job, man. You know, so, you know, there's got to be an accountable, you know, person that is going to say, I'm responsible for making sure that this gets done, it gets executed. So, you know, that's how you want to be operating. And this will evolve. It'll evolve with the addition of a new team member. It will evolve,
right,
you know, with your level of expertise and training. So, you know, but this is a start. You're setting the foundation, which is really, really good. And once we really get into talking about keeping track in the game board, and you show up for your Friday or Monday huddle up session, you know, you're going to say, hey, how did we do on planning? Oh, we set a goal to do 5, but we only did 4. Well, what happened to the 5th plan? That person that's responsible knows what happened and can elaborate on that with the rest of the team. So that's how you want to be giving that give and take on the team dynamic. Okay.
So did we cover it here, or we?
Any other issues on delegation of duties and responsibilities or questions? Okay.
All right. Shall we turn to the lesson for this week, which is the power of full engagement, the process of, and you know, there's probably never been a more important time for us to understand the value of balance in our life, and to understand the value of proper recovery. This is stuff that has, you know, changed people's lives that I've been involved in over the years. And it's been one of the most important concepts. So in order to perform at a high level for extended periods of time, we don't have an off season in our business. You're on season. Every basketball teams, baseball, every other, you know, profession that we think of in terms of the world of sport has an off season. We have no off season. We're performing sprints, that all congregate into one long, year long marathon. And then it starts over again. So in order to do that, we need to have ideal recovery state. So we create, you know, what would your productivity be if you were fully engaged the whole time that you were committed to working? You weren't distracted, you were focused, and you knew exactly what you're doing when you're supposed to do it. That's called productivity. In order to do that, we need ideal recovery. So that's why we break our segments in Supernova into 50-minute sessions at the max, so we get off and have time to drink, walk around, drink a little water, eat something small, but just to keep our energy up. I happen to be hypoglycemic, so I need to do this in order to keep my keep at a level that's consistent. So I need 8 hours of sleep, proper amount of sleep, exercise. You need 1 hour of pretty intense exercise every day. Now, you may not be able to get that, but 30 minutes is better than nothing. So, and walking is better than nothing versus, you know, if you can go aerobic, anaerobic, that's terrific. But do the best you can. And there's a book called Younger Next Year, which is a great supplement for you today, but more importantly, when your clients retire. This is, should be a have-to gift to all of them. And it talks about when you get to our stage, Curtis, at my stage, it's the quality of your life, not just longevity, but the quality of that longevity. And Younger Next Year talks about 60 minutes of intense exercise every day. So it's a very good thing to give to your clients that are graduating from whatever they were doing full time. So proper amount of sleep, exercise, and diet. Diet is just a matter of eating, you know, the right food at the right time and not too much of it. So, I know it's something you hear about a lot. Some of you are going to be really good at this. Some of you, it's a part of your life, but it's been a part of Curtis's and my life ever since we've known each other, and we've been the beneficiary of it, and it's kept us fortunately pretty good shape. And you think,
hey,
well,
Rob.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say there's another version of that book that's called Younger Next Year, either like for her or for women. And I'm sorry, I look like I'm in the witness protection program today.
Mary!
So if you have female clients, it's a good one to give that's specific to our gender.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
You know, Rob, one of the things I did as a branch manager, which was, you know, people were used to seeing the parade of stars coming into the office. And one day I actually brought Jim Lehrer and team into the office to really have a discussion about health and fitness and nutrition. And, you know, right now, personally, I have a nutritionist that I call on from time to time. And, you know, I'm going to throw the military analogy at you all for a moment. You know, in the military, they tell you when to get up, when to go to sleep. They tell you when you're going to train, when to get rest, when to get recovery. And you have to build those disciplines in what you do. So, you know, I exercise 6 days per week. During this pandemic, you know, I had to go to the storage unit and pull out some dumbbells and a bench. I ordered myself a spin cycle. You know, they said it would be here in 4 days. Then I found out it's coming from China. So it's going to be like a month. So I'm hoping that that gets here this week. But in the interim, you know, I'm going for a 3 mile walk every morning, before I start my day. I bought a bicycle. You know, I was used to going to the gym. Gyms are closed out here. So, you know, I get on that bike and I go for a bike ride. And so I really do think that you have to put your physical health in the realm of priority. You know, to me, it's your spiritual health, it's your physical health, and your mental health. And you've got to do those things. I read a daily devotional every morning, and I start off doing my stretching, and I knock out, you know, my push-ups and my crunches and that sort of thing. So it takes 21 days to create a habit. So if you can, you know, put yourself in the position of just starting to do something and start to create a habit in 21 days, you'll be on the road to really taking care of yourself. And I hope you do that.
Can I just jump in?
Yeah,
here,
sure.
Really quickly. I wanted to jump on the back of this because, when I have my sales calls with, my branch, my biggest thing that I end with is something self-care related. And my motto is put your mask on first. You know, when you're getting on the plane and they go through all the machinations of what you need to do should they lose cabin pressure, the mask drop, and they tell you to put yours on before you even try to assist with anybody else. And I think that is the biggest thing that I have seen with my financial advisors, with the support professionals, that I would encourage you to be intentional about, because you're in constant triage mode right now. And so the instinct is to think that it might be selfish to put your mask on first, but if you're not breathing, then you can't help anybody else get air. And so I would say that if you're not thinking along that line, that it is important to think about you, to take a minute, to breathe, to get some fresh air, some real daylight. But I think the biggest refrain that I just keep trying to preach to my financial advisors, because they're busting it. Everybody's hoofing it. You're all humping it right now. You wake up, bless you. You wake up and you're at work. You go to bed and you're at work. You go to the restroom and you're at work. You take a snack and you're at work. Everywhere is at work, right? And then you add children to the mix. And if you've got children going back to school virtually, you add all that to the mix. I would just suggest you be intentional about putting your mask on first, whatever that looks like. You know what that looks like, but take care of you and feel no guilt about it, because you'll look up and you're no good to your clients if your head is full, we've got communication coming left and right. And a lot of us, I had somebody share with me that they felt like their head was full. They could not process another thing. And that is when you become counterproductive, not even unproductive, but counter. So if you haven't done it yet, take a minute and figure out what putting your mask on first looks like and do that. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Good points. Very good.
And I would say that looking at the pictures of my team and looking at you guys, it looks like you've got this under control. So give me some feedback, guys.
I mean, can I just say it's okay to put the skunk on the table and talk about the stink? If something about this sucks, let's put it out there. Let's talk about it now. We don't just want to hear everything that's fabulous. We don't expect it to be kumbaya. What are the challenges? How are we doing, honestly?
I'll speak. This is Keith. Can you hear me?
Yep.
So, first of all, I'd like to, suggestion of that book. It was referred to me by an older client years ago, and I read it, and it was one of the most inspiring books. When you first start reading it, it's a doctor, and then his patient, a 70-year-old retiree, is, but I have turned more clients and people onto that book that have also responded back thanking me for giving it to them. I mean, it's truly an inspiring book. So, second, some of the stink for me is just, I think I've got the working out and staying healthy part all figured out. I mean, I'm sure I can always do better, but my problem is figuring this stuff out and having time to work on this, having time to do the assignments. I guess I've been triage for 32 years. So it's, to think about trying to change that in a matter of weeks has become very difficult. So I'm feeling constantly behind, and, we're behind the eight ball on getting up to speed on this. But, in theory and intellectually, I understand it all makes sense. It's just a matter of putting it into practice is the hard part for me.
Thanks, Keith. I appreciate that honesty, that level of honesty and openness about it, because, that's what we talk through. That's what we need to work through. So, Rob, Curtis, coaches, thoughts?
I think that's normal. And I would be really, really surprised if you weren't feeling just a tad bit overwhelmed with the amount of information. Because of the way we coach, the reviews that we do, the videos that we do, the first 12 weeks is intense. And then you're going to get repetition, bring up issues that you're facing continuously. And, we're going to be with you for a year, which means that any deficiencies, anything that might be loose and not, fully absorbed, we'll go back to it, until you are comfortable. But yeah, you're making a paradigm shift in creating this new concierge practice. And I'm just here to say, with all of the folks that we've coached, you are going to be a great beneficiary of the good things that are going to come. So I want to just say that and put that out there, that it's normal to experience, some of the challenges, that you might face. But do some one-off. If you need a one-off with Rob, if you need to send an email, because he's your coach, feel free to do that. But let me hear what Rob has to say. You have anything, Rob?
Well, everybody comes into this program in a different place. And some people are going to be like, I've waited my whole life for this. I'm ready. And some people are going to be, wait a minute. I didn't know it was going to be all this change. I haven't made a change in 5 years, and you want me to make a change, more change in 1 year than I've in 1 week, in 1 month, than I've made in the last 5 years. So change is always hard, especially if it's not your idea. I mean, then it becomes even harder, because now you're like, all these other people think it's a good idea, but I'm not sure. Does it really apply to me? And I'm doing okay. I'm pretty happy. So that becomes more difficult. So we understand that, and not everybody comes at the same place. You never step into the same river twice, right? Cause we change, the river changes. It's the same place in the river, but you're going to be in a different place a year from now. I have, honestly, Keith, the best success I have with teams is the second time they go through the program. Because the first time they go through, they're fighting with themselves and they're fighting with teammates and they're all the change they have to make, and they do great, but then they call me up like 3 years later and say, okay, I've got two more team members. Can we go through, you know, can I have an update on the program? I say, well, why don't we just go through the whole thing again? And they're like, okay. And we go through the whole thing again, and they are superstars this time. You see, because they get it. And when we go through a chapter, they've heard it before, but they didn't adopt it, right? And so Mary knows. I've said, how many times have I told you this, Mary? The second time through, I have so much fun, and they have so much fun, because we're not making excruciating changes. We're, oh, we didn't do that. We didn't do the agenda, you know. We didn't do the executive summary. So let's try that now. So it sounds crazy, but it's kind of like, you know, you're going to get overwhelmed by this, no matter who you are. But over time, you're going to see the value. Going through it once is terrific, and you'll make changes. Your team will be better off. You'll do great. You'll hate, you know, you'll hate parts of it. You're not going to want to do it. And I understand, but you'll still get a lot out of it. Second time through, you're not fighting all that. You're kind of like, oh wow, we did it. And I know it works. Now, what did I miss? Because I was so caught up in me, you know, in trying to resolve the issues that I was having, that I couldn't listen to all the other stuff. So I missed all the acquisition, and I missed half of the other stuff. So second time through, you kind of are ready, and you listen. So, you know, I've coached some people for 10 years. I can't get rid of them. You know, they just like having a coach, and we do a lot of case study work. And once you get yourself organized and efficient and effective, then you get into the fun stuff, which is, you know, we have this situation. I've got this, I mean, you know, how many times do I today, twice, I had two people talk to me about opportunities that they had where they were going to get, you know, one opportunity. And I said, well, what about all the other people that are getting those rollovers? And they go, oh, I didn't think about that. Yeah, there's 20 people, 20 executives retiring, and I've got one of them. Well, what about the other 19? Can't we get them? And so it's just, you know, two people looking at the same puzzle see different things. And so having a coach is always a good idea. When you're going through this, this is more like a divorce. This is more like, oh my God, I got to give away clients. I got to do this. I got to get organized. I can't just wing it. You mean I'm going to have to be organized and make calls? But I just had two people go on vacation, and I said, so how did it go? Oh, fine. You know, we turned it all over to one person. We put off some of the calls to the next time, and that worked fine. And it's fine. We're doing great, you know. So Supernova it appears to be very strict. But at its purest, it is. But, you know, we don't, if we want you to adopt as much of it as you humanly possible without making yourself crazy. So that's too much time. But good comments.
Other questions or concerns? Thanks for chiming in on that, Keith, because that was an excellent point.
Everybody good? How about success stories? Let's end on a couple.
Well, I'd say Payden started out with one with the assets that were uncovered, you know, on top of the phone calls that you made. So I want to circle back and recognize that and just kudos.
Yeah, Curtis, you were definitely right. While doing this, it worked.
I'll give you a couple of success stories that I've witnessed in a relatively short period of time. One of the things we get to when a person is now organized and ready to leapfrog and make a real substantial impact in the business, and this happens to be a Morgan Stanley FA, he was doing 1.7 million last year and is now at 2.2 million. And a month ago added a new $17 million relationship due to the fact that, you know, he took a very, very consistent approach, developing centers of influence, which he hadn't been doing. And so he brought in, a great relationship, because he was offering the platform. He explained to the COI, my concierge practice, and now he is getting substantial relationships. I had another, FA who, decided that, you know, their expertise on that team was their expertise, and they were encouraged to partner with an FA that had expertise that they didn't have. And they brought in a $50 million endowment, through philanthropic, services and capabilities. And then on a smaller level, I'll just give you a short one. And Rob's got these stories too, but here we have a guy who was a pension expert, and we helped him refine his vision statement and value proposition, and creating the monthly agendas, which is part of what we do at Supernova. And you've got to free up your time through segmentation to get to that point, to your point, Keith. So I said, why don't you identify long-term care as maybe an agenda item? So he batch processed, had 30 cases on long-term care.
Wow.
So, in a month, 30 cases. And so what we're doing here is we're helping you right size so you can position yourself for this incremental growth. And while you are learning a lot of new stuff, We're setting you up for this concierge practice that differentiates you among other FAs in your market. That's our goal, that for you to be able to differentiate yourself and pull down some substantial relationships in the market. So Rob, you may have a couple that you want to share because you've been at this for a while too.
Yeah. I mean, we wouldn't be doing this if it didn't work. Right? We don't sell poison. It works. I mean, it just works. I mean, I just had a case before I got on here. You know, the guys have brought in this world. It's a small team in Pennsylvania, just the young guys, and they brought in nice bunch of different ones, but a $4.5 million net new money so far this year in a world where many people aren't bringing anything in. So how do they do it? They got a good, we got, you know, they're all segmented. We're in month three. So we've been through the 12 weeks. They're organized, you know, they report into me by director of planning, implementation, brand management, marketing and leadership. And they've got a robust pipeline. They report, they check the pipeline every day and they talk about it every week. And they're holding each other accountable and they're doing great. They're just uncovering lots of cases that they wouldn't have covered otherwise. The other thing that I've kind of discovered is that the center of influence and the mastermind groups and all that are really connected to becoming friends with these people. That, you know, you either start with friends or you make friends. And when you're, you know, what's it take to be a good friend? So we always say, well, I've given this CPA, you know, 5 introductions and 5 clients and he's given me none. And my question back is, are you friends? You know, are you really friends? No. Are you, you know, what are you? Well, we're acquaintances. Well, you're not going to get introduction until you're friends. You got to be a friend. So what do friends do? They call each other, right? They check up on each other, make sure they're okay. They give them ideas. They share. So we suggest you call your center of influence every month. That's what you call a friend every month, right? So think of it as friend making, not prospecting, and develop and be a connector. Don't just be a person that is looking for business, but be a giver. And surround yourself with givers. You know, we don't build a team of people around us that give great service. We build a group of people that value service and individually are givers and give great service, and then we put them all together and all of a sudden we're a team that gives great service. But you don't turn a taker and a person that doesn't care about service into a service person. See what I mean? It's very important to start with good. So you surround yourself with centers of influence that are givers and care and make good friends and get rid of the ones that don't make good friends and aren't givers. So you become a connector among people that are helpful and value service. So you kind of build your, they got rid of a big account, this other team, and they were very proud of it because the person was a jerk. You know, and it didn't fit, right? And so that made them very happy. And I congratulated them as much on that as bringing in the money that they brought in. So build your practice around the things that you value. And, you know, Curtis and I spend a lot of time on this. And so on values, mission, vision, you know, what's a great team? What are great leaders? You got to start with your servant leadership mentality of giving and helping in order to get. So be that good friend, care about other people, check up on them, and build your network of professionals among those that you think are similar to you, that you like and trust. So it makes life better, makes life easier, and makes life much more fun. Then you don't mind those calls to the centers of influence. In fact, you look forward to them because they're all friends. So with that, I think we will end. Ebony, thank you for putting all these teams, wonderful teams together. We really enjoy coaching them, and hopefully we bring some value, and we'll continue to bring that. And Mary Mock, thank you for supporting us and doing the things that you do all the time for us. So. And thanks, teams, for getting to week 4. And it gets easier.
Lisa, Ted, and Johnny, good to see you all and chat with you. And we'll look forward to our next call.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Thank you, guys.
Everybody.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.